In the twilight of my life, I began to question if my childhood was a time of almost absurd languor, or if the violence that would strike us later had lurked there all along. I revisited certain of these memories, determined to find the hidden vein of savagery within them, the sticky hand, the scattered nuts, the gap-toothed girl grasping a firecracker, a cap floating on the Seine, flayed legs swinging between a pair of crutches, the tailor and his mouthful of pins. Some of these were immediately ominous, while others only later revealed themselves as such. However, whether or not another boy living my life would agree, I cannot say. Of the humble beginnings from which my father built his fame, I knew only a few details. My grandfather, Abraham Beranzon, born in 1865, had inherited an artist's supply store. He sold tinctures, oil, canvases, palettes and palette knives, miniver brushes made from squirrel fur, purple-labeled bottles of turpentine, and easels, which my father described as stacked like a pile of bones. The shop was wedged between a cobbler's and a dressmaker's. Artists paid in paintings when they could not pay their bills, and as Renoir, Pissarro, and Courbet were far better with paint than with money, the family built up a collection. When the value of a painting exceeded the price of its paint, Abraham sold it and invested the money with the Count Moïse de Camondo, a Jew from Istanbul with an Italian title and a counting house that he named the Bank of Constantinople. Both men loved art, and they were fast friends. By 1900, Abraham could purchase an apartment on Rue Lafitte, near Notre-Dame de Lorette, in a neighborhood known as the Florence of Paris. Soon afterward, Moïse de Camondo recommended that my grandfather invest in the railroads. Coffers opened by the beauty of paint were lined with the spoils of steel, steam, and iron, and my grandfather did not have to sell any more of his paintings. As a teenager, I often passed by Rue Lafitte and imagined the family home as it had once been, as my father had described it, each picture on the grand salon's walls opening like a window onto a wintry landscape, a tilted table with rolling apples, a ballet studio blooming with turquoise tulle. The salon's chandelier shone onto the street through windows which, as was the case across the continent, were made from high-quality crystal. On sunny afternoons, grandfather's gallery was so ablaze with prismatic light that schoolchildren returning home for lunch thought they saw angels fluttering down Rue Lafitte. They reported their sightings to the choirmaster at Notre-Dame de Lorette. When he could no longer bear to tell any more youngsters that they had not seen angels but just rainbows, and from a Jew's house, no less, the choirmaster hinted to some older boys that perhaps they should break the windows. Which they did. At least that was how my father explained the attack on his childhood home in July of 1906. Then again, Dreyfus had just been exonerated, and there were many such outbursts across Paris. Abraham had followed the trial closely, nearly sleepless until the Jewish captain's verdict was announced. 2 days later, hoping to spare a dog that ran into the road, he drove his open-roofed Delage into an arbor of pollarded trees on Avenue de Breteuil. My 16-year-old father, Daniel, was pinned between the tree trunk and the crushed hood as Abraham expired beside him. From then on, my father walked with a limp, which 8 years later exempted him from service in the Great War. So whether he was lucky or unlucky, I could not exactly say. In 1917, my father purchased the building at 21 Rue de la Boétie after my mother, Eva, agreed to marry him. For this young Polish beauty, whom he hardly knew and who spoke comically stilted French, he bought a house in a neighborhood known for its tolerance of the creative temperament. Yes, as if in anticipation of the utter bleakness that would eventually follow, that block was home not only to my father, the collector, and my mother, the virtuoso pianist, but also to a choreographer renowned for his collaboration with Diaghilev, the Hungarian trumpeter most preferred by European conductors to perform the second of the Brandenburg Concertos, a sculptor known for his works in bronze and his clamorous machines, and 3 years later, though without the same fanfare, me. From the well of my early childhood, only one half-lit event emerges. I am in the forest, and a small girl shares a sweet bag of nuts with me. We dance on the mossy floor, and she holds my sticky fist in her own. Until late in my life, I supposed that the little girl in the white dress had been a dream, invented sometime in the crepuscular years before my 7th birthday. I remembered nothing at all before 1927, when Lindbergh landed at Le Bourget on an airfield lit brighter than day. This absence of memory was natural, I imagined. I had no siblings with whom to compare my experience, and was loath to press others into discussing my youth.